All right. Welcome to Romero Records Podcast. Today we have on Jupiter Jones.
That's me.
How's it going?
It's going well. Long day.
Yeah. So, it's been a while since I've done a podcast. Last one was with Latino and DMG artists, just kind of knocking them out. But now we have you on. So I guess if you could just kind of get into, I don't know where we should start. Because I want people to know about you. Like, I want people to, you know, get whatever side of you. But, like, I'm also interested. Like, we talk
right?
and stuff like that. But I'm also interested. So let's kind of go back to, I guess, so you're from here, right?
I am.
What like, schooling did you go through? And, like, where did you go to school?
I went to St. Anne, like, down the street, Bartlett. And then for high school, I went to St. Benedict. And then college, I went to U of M for 2 years, and then I dropped out.
Where's St. Benedict?
That is, you know where IKEA is on Germantown Parkway?
Yes.
It's like right across.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. Did you like that school? No?
No. It was not fun.
Well, what didn't you like about it?
It's a Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
And they have certain beliefs that don't align with mine. And they were they would, like, force you to do certain things or practice certain things just because it was a Catholic school, which it makes sense. And at the same time, like, one time they sent a dude home because he was wearing a shirt that had a rainbow on it because they were trying to say, like, gay stuff isn't okay. And it was literally just a rainbow.
Mm.
So it just seemed very pointless, and, like, they were trying to prove a point, but it just made them look kind of bad.
That's wild.
And then over the lockdown, they had a whole bunch of drama. Because there was this white girl that decided to post a video of her saying the N-word on her Snapchat. And when some of the students went to administration to get them to do something about it, they didn't. And then all of the alumni were like, hey, we need you to do something about this. And that was when they finally did something. And then also people on Twitter from, like, all over the world were attacking their Twitter account because they weren't doing anything about it.
But, oh, my God.
Yeah. It was crazy. I'm wild. Not a fan of them at all.
So why did you go to school there? Parents were just like, you're going here?
Yeah, they wanted me to go to a Catholic school. And I have three older sisters, and they all went there as well. So it just made sense for me to go there.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's very interesting because where I'm from a really small town.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't even think of a city around here that's similar to it. But, like, 6,000 people was the population.
Mm-hmm.
And so I graduated with, like, 100 people. And so, like, my school was very, like, everybody knows everybody type of thing. And I liked it, but, like, thinking about it now, like, I feel like I would hate that, that situation. But, like, growing up, like, I thought it is what it was, but... yeah, it's very interesting that I had no idea that you went to that school.
That's why I am the way I am. If you were ever wondering.
So, did you live in Bartlett?
Mm-hmm.
And you drove down there?
Yeah, it was like a 20-minute drive.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's still a good bit drive to go to school, I guess.
Yeah.
Depending on traffic and stuff like that.
Yeah, especially going down Germantown Parkway for half of that drive.
Yeah.
If I left too late, I was going to be late for school.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild. So you go to college. You said you went to U of M, right?
Mm-hmm.
How did you pick U of M? Why'd you go there?
Well, I never really wanted to go to school in the first place. And so I applied to Southwest. And I was honestly kind of hoping that I wouldn't get in anywhere, because it was obviously my parents wanted me to go, so I needed to have an excuse to not go.
Your parents were making some crazy decisions for you.
Yeah, I know. Let's not talk about it. But what was I talking about?
We need to have a talk.
Yeah.
We need to have a talk here, apparently.
What was I talking about? Can I curse?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Why did I go to you? Yeah, okay. So I didn't want to go to school. And then I got accepted to U of M, and I didn't want to go out of state for school because I didn't even want to be going in the first place. So it was like, okay, I guess I'll just go here. I didn't like want to go there. It was just close and a school. Yeah.
So you did like, what was it? Something with music, right?
I was in recording technology.
Recording technology.
So it was like basic music classes, music theory, piano, jazz piano, other stuff that I can't remember, ear training, which I cried during that class many times. Yeah.
And any of those classmates, you said you knew Esmod, right? Anybody else that like has kind of stood out as far as like people that you were classmates with that you're like still friends with or anything?
No. I don't talk to any of them.
And see, that's something I find interesting. So I don't know if you know this, but, and everybody please correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I heard, like Harvard isn't really expensive to get into for like to go to school or whatever. It's based off of like your family's income. So like if you're poor and you get accepted into Harvard, like it's not expensive and you're going to get like scholarships probably. Okay. But if like your family's really wealthy, then it's going to be expensive because it's like based off your family's income. That's what I heard. Obviously, I haven't been to Harvard. But the pitch for Harvard and like Columbia and like all these prestigious Ivy League schools is the networking. So like if you go to like a Yale or Harvard or whatever, you're in school with all these other like rich and prestigious families. So that's their pitch is like, hey, so-and-so went to the school too. You know who else went to the school? This person. So wouldn't you want to go to school with all these other fantastic alumni? So like, and honestly, I think that's a lot of universities pitch nowadays that, you know, everybody's been going to school for so long is like, you want to come to school. You want to go to university because all these people have gone here and like you have these networking abilities because like now you have access and resources. But as you just said, you went to U of M to recording technologies in a city that's known for music and you didn't make any real connections. Now, some people could say that would be because of your attitude, like when you were in school, but the school too is kind of responsible for like your connections.
Yeah.
Like events. Like the school could have a bunch of events that require you to do them or just like help set you up to like have connections in the music industry.
Yeah.
So it's on the school to create those opportunities, in my opinion. You can't put that on 18 to 22 year olds on creating their own opportunities for the rest of their lives. Like that's your job. That's why I'm paying you tuition and books and room and board so that you give me these opportunities. I say all that to ask, do you feel like U of M gave you the opportunities or do you feel like you kind of had to make them for yourself?
I think I definitely had to make them. There wasn't like a lack of events that they were holding, but there definitely could have been more. And it was also partly the students that I was in school with. I don't know how many of the people Esmod was friends with, but I didn't get amazing vibes from majority of them. I think I told you the other day, like they were all band kids from the same school or they just had gone to the same school in general. And no one from my high school had gone into anything to do with music. So I was really on my own and I was trying to make friends because I didn't want to be lonely. But they were very cliquey and were not inviting and not very accepting. So I'd more so blame it on the students that I was with at the time, just because it, I don't know what it was, but they just didn't want to be my friend. It's fine, though.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. Like, yeah. You know, we all get into situations where we don't know if the people around us are going to end up being just another classmate, another associate, or a forever friend. Mm-hmm. And I've had people who are like, dude, we're going to be friends for forever. And then, like, I stopped talking to them after, like, a few months or a year or something like that. So, I mean, it happens. Mm-hmm. So, when did you figure out that you were going to U of M? Like, as soon as you graduated?
Yeah, I think I, like, took my ACT. That's the thing you take, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, took my ACT, bombed it. Like, I can't even tell anyone my score. And then somehow I got accepted. Mm. And, like, I think probably a month before I graduated was when I found out. Mm. So it was like, oh, shit, I have to go to college now. Hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm just thinking about when you were thinking to what school to go to and, like, what you were going to major in and how you said none of your classmates went. What was going through your mind as far as, like, you know, who am I going to see in college? And, I mean, did you have friends that went to other high schools or was it mainly just your school or what?
Do you mean, like, going to U of M in general or?
Yeah, so, like, when you were in high school and then you were deciding to go to U of M, mm-hmm. did you have any, like, other friends in other high schools? Like, people who went to school in this area that you knew of and, like, hey, is anybody going to U of M? Mm-hmm. Or, yeah.
No. Well, I had friends from SBA that went to U of M. They just weren't in the same major as me. Oh, okay. Like, they weren't in the music school at all. They were, like, in psychology and other things, anthropology, I think. Shout out, Shay. But I just kind of, once I realized that the people that were in my classes didn't want to hang out with me, I was like, okay, friends that I have from high school, when are your classes? When can we hang out? When can we have lunch together? Because it would have just been painful, more painful if I didn't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you drop out of high school. I mean, you drop out of college.
Yeah.
And you start working?
Mm-hmm.
Where'd you start working?
Area 51 Ice Cream at Crosstown.
Okay. And how was that?
I mean, they paid me $8 an hour, so it was meh. Working at an ice cream shop in the summer is not fun. Don't recommend it to anybody.
Now, some people, they like those kind of jobs just because they're, you know, low responsibility. You're just messing with ice cream. You're not going to burn anything down or anything like that. So.
Yeah. It's very low stakes, but the people that want the ice cream are making it seem like we're curing cancer or something.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of food because of that. Like, when do people come and get food? When they're hungry. When are people angry? When they're hungry.
Yep.
So,
yep.
So that's usually a horrible time to be working in the service industry is like when somebody's hungry. So
yep.
So you worked there for like a long time or just a little while?
I worked there for a few months and then I think August or September of 2021, I got hired at the grocery store that was in Crosstown and got promoted to assistant manager within a month because I'm that bitch. It was great.
So back-to-back jobs in the concourse.
Yeah, and now I'm on my third one now.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
How?
Free me.
Like why did you end up doing that?
So I made friends that were at that grocery store when I was still at Area 51, and they were like, we can get you hired over here. And I was like, bet, because they were going to pay me $12, and that's a lot compared to $8. So they hired me, and then when I was tired of working at the curb market, I was asking around the building because at the time I was living like 15 minutes away from the concourse. So it just kind of made sense to look around in that same area. And then the owner of my current job was in the shop and I was like, hey, are you hiring? And he was like, yeah, come over and talk to me. And then I got hired.
Hmm. So, on top of doing concourse jobs, you have now, I'm just trying to fast track to where we are now. Mm-hmm. you run into Diari at some point. Mm-hmm. And Diari, he comes up to me and tells me about you. And then we meet and we start doing music. Mm-hmm. What was your experience before all of that, before we met and started doing music?
Well, I was like trying to make songs on GarageBand and I did not know what I was doing. So that I never uploaded anything. I didn't release any music.
I guess a better question is, where did you leave off at recording technologies for, or recording principles?
What's the question?
Like, where did you leave off at? Like, because I'm assuming your curriculum started at like, this is an interface or this is a board, a soundboard or something, like how to record stuff, right?
I didn't know anything other than like turning the volume up and pressing record. And I saw that compressor thing and I was like, let's see what that does.
Okay.
And, like figuring out the voice effects that it had. But I didn't know like any of the technical terms. Like if you told me like, do something with the equalizer. I don't even know what that is now. Like I wouldn't have known.
Okay. So they taught you or like were showing you some things, but like it wasn't enough for you to be like, I could do this for myself.
Yeah. Okay. And then that was why I wanted to go into recording technology so that I could learn, so I could do it outside of school, but I didn't get far enough to.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you did. You were singing and stuff, though, right?
Mm-hmm. Like like posting videos on Instagram and TikTok. And that's how Diari discovered me.
He found you from TikTok?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I think a friend might have sent him my videos. But, we started following each other. And then he was like, let's write a song. And I was like, okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So, like, what did you think about, like, that right there? Like, being found through TikTok? From you posting videos, you're like, this works. You know, like, what were you thinking?
It was a relief that somebody had seen me and seen what I was posting and liked the sound because I really only had like my close friends to ask opinions and they're honest, but they're nice because they love me.
Yeah.
But having someone that I don't know tell me that I have a lot of potential and that they really like my voice, like that means a lot. So it was a really big deal, especially once I had listened to Diari's music and heard that he wanted to work with me. It was like, who am I? Why me? And I still feel that way.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I think people underestimate that simple notion of telling somebody that they're good at something or telling them that you want to listen to what they have or see what they have. Mm-hmm. Like if somebody's a dancer and like, hey man, I want to come to one of your concerts and like watch you dance or like, oh, you play violin. Like I'd love to come listen to you play violin or something like that. It sounds so cliche or it sounds like goofy, but I think it's important that you do that. Like support your friends on whatever they're doing.
Absolutely.
Even if they're not that great, they might find some kind of confidence, and that might be what they're lacking, right? Because you know from like singing, if you're not confident in what you're singing, you might not get the best sound out of your voice.
Yeah.
So if somebody isn't that great, they just might not be confident.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need some little bit of confidence to like get better at it. So I'm sure that helped with your confidence, like knowing Diari like believed in you and somebody else was out there that saw what you were able to do.
Yeah. It was like, I remember I was living with my best friends at the time and it was like, I'd never recorded in a studio. I'd never done like a music video or anything. So I could just see all of these opportunities unrolling for me because he offered to record with me. And especially like covering the price of everything like that meant a lot as well. Cause it was like, I could completely flop and you have just paid for this studio time and I appreciate you for that.
Yeah.
And then it just became me being in DMG and that was like, ugh. Like I remember I probably looked crazy after the DMG show because I came up to you and I was like, thank you so much for letting me perform. Like, I had such a good time. And you were like, yeah, Yeah, but I like genuinely, I mean that to this day. Like, I really do appreciate everything that you've done.
And I said this to Tino, like, it was so amazing, which I kind of like forgot about you also, like, also not knowing you.
Mm-hmm.
But like, when Coffee brought Tino on, I don't know if you knew this, but I had no idea that Tino was going to be there. Mm-hmm. I didn't know who he was or anything. And I think Crisis met Tino or something like it was either Coffee met Tino or Crisis met Tino at a performance. I think it was Coffee. That's why he was on stage. That's right. But Coffee had met Tino at some like performance they were doing together and they just clicked. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, hey, I got this DMG concert and you can come on this. So I'm just like, that's so awesome. The fact that Coffee brought Tino to the concert and then Diari brought you to the concert. Like, that's all I ever wanted was that was so like very special moments to me because people that I was trying to help have a platform created a platform for other people.
Yeah.
And like for people to be able to do that shows number one, what DMG stands for is like helping people and like allowing other people to grow and really letting the artist kind of control what their career can do. Cause like, you know, I didn't tell anybody like, no, don't do anything crazy. Like, let's keep this under control. Like, I had no idea what was going to happen. Like, I orchestrated the concert. Me and Rachel put everything together. But at the end of the day, whatever happened, happened.
Yeah.
Like, it could have got wild, but like everything, it went pretty smooth and it was really fun. So I think that was great that you had a great time, that you came and performed. You could have been scared or waited.
Oh, I was. I was terrified. I was shaking.
Was that your first performance?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That's why it was such a big deal. I'd done like talent shows, but that's nothing compared to doing an actual show.
You never done like an open mic or anything? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
I know. So you get it now.
I'm sure you were like shaking.
I was. I had like two drinks before I went on stage.
Oh my God.
I was worried
God.
I might forget the lyrics. Didn't. Did great.
That's so wild. And what did y'all perform? I don't even know what you performed.
Oh my goodness. It was, we didn't release this song. We should have. It was some, I don't even remember. I remember my lyrics.
Was it that Sometimes song that we shot that video for?
Oh. No, it wasn't. It was something else.
Dang.
I don't remember what it was called.
Why'd y'all release it?
I don't know.
Diari.
I know he wanted to release, I think he wanted to release the Sometimes thing. But I didn't like the video for that because I'm insecure. But whatever it was. We'll talk later. Whatever it was that we did record, it's somewhere in my Dropbox or in my text.
Okay.
You hit him up and ask if he wants to release it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So you perform that song. You're at the concert. Everything goes great. Did we talk before that? Or no, I hadn't met you yet, right?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think we talked.
So we talk after that. What did you think about, I guess, our transaction as far as like talking about working together and stuff? Because you said you've been singing and everything before, but now I'm bringing you to the studio. Was Diari here?
The first few times, yeah.
Yeah, and so we just kind of talked about what you want to do, in your career and everything. How did you feel about that?
Intimidated for sure. It felt, well, okay, so this is a big deal for me. Like, it still is. But it felt like a much bigger deal at the time because I was so nervous that, like, I wasn't going to perform well or I wasn't going to be what you were looking for or I wasn't going to be able to write enough songs or something. But I think the first time that me and you actually talked about being involved in DMG, that was, Diari was here, and you were just saying how the whole thing was to help me figure out what to do in the music industry and like help me get to the next step with a different label. And I was intimidated, but I was also like, okay, I feel safe here. I feel supported. And then just as time went on, it's just, especially getting closer with the guys that are in DMG, like it's just become like a family thing and it doesn't feel like a work thing. It's like, these are my friends and we all create and we create together and we support each other because that's what we're supposed to do because we're friends. So I think it's definitely less intimidating now. Yeah, that's all I have.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what we aim for, mm-hmm. is for you to know that you have a support system, mm-hmm. and that you still are kind of by yourself, but at the same time, you're not. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't want anybody to feel as if, you know, I'm forcing them to do anything or changing who they are or anything like that. I just wanted people to know that, like, whatever you want to do, I can help make sure that all your decisions are like the right decision. Mm-hmm. So like, even with you like changing your name, like I never told you, you need to go with a name like this. Mm-hmm. I was just like, keep this in mind, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Like even with Jupiter Jones, like there's some other band named Jupiter Jones, but they, but no, they spell it different and they're like they speak a different language. I don't even think they do English stuff. I can't remember. But, just like having those things in mind and having that kind of advice, mm-hmm. I think is super helpful for a young artist. Absolutely. Because it's like, you would have never thought about that. Mm-hmm. Like I was talking to a guy one time on a podcast and he had started like a ton of businesses and he was like, man, this one time I started this business and like, you know, we got the LLC, we got all this stuff. We started the business, had everything up and running. And then I think he said they got like a cease and desist because they were using a name that was already trademarked. And I was like, that's the first thing I did when I started.
Yeah.
The very first thing I did was look up the name to make sure nobody else was using it.
Yeah.
So like it's some of those like small things that some people don't even think about that can stop you, you know, wherever, how far you go, it can stop you. And so, I think that was very helpful for you and even just like the creation of music. Like I kind of helped you mold whatever ideas you had.
Yeah.
But you really knew the kind of music. You knew that you wanted to do like pop and stuff like that. And Billie Eilish is a big inspiration, right?
Yeah. I've shown you some wonky ass beats and not once have you been like, I don't know. And I appreciate that. But yeah,
I want you to experiment.
just get it out of my system. But yeah, with Billie, I think I started listening to her in 2016. My best friend showed me her music and I think I always knew that I wanted to be a singer, but especially watching the way that she did things, it was like, it just really kicked into gear. Like, okay, this is what I want to do. And it got to the point where it was my personality, especially in high school. And now it's like, I can't get away from it because sometimes I sing similarly. And people are like, oh, you sound like Billie Eilish. You kind of look like Billie Eilish. No, I don't. I don't look anything like that woman. I mean, that's a huge compliment, but I don't. I kind of stopped listening to her music. Sorry, Billy. just because I need to not have that as inspiration anymore, like in the back of my head of like, okay, Billy did this.
Yeah.
I want to be figuring out what I want to do and if I can come up with a signature thing for myself.
Yeah, that's what happened with Dee Dee and Kevin Gates. He's a huge Kevin Gates fan. You know, he's from Dee Dee's from New Orleans. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Kevin Gates is from like Baton Rouge or whatnot, but he's from Louisiana. And Dee Dee, I think he's Dominican. But anyways, he's known as like a Louisiana rapper or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that would happen with Dee Dee. Like he would send me his music. He would record at home and send it to me. And I was like, this sounds a lot like Kevin Gates. Mm-hmm. And when I would tell him that, he'd be like, nah, bro. But he told me, he was like, yeah, I have to go through phases where I just stop listening to him.
Yeah.
Because, like, my music sounds like him, and I just, like, kind of act or talk like him or whatever. So I just have to stop because otherwise I just kind of take on that personality, as you said. So that's a real thing that artists go through, and I don't know if most people know that, but it is.
Yeah. It sucks, and at the same time, like, it's one of the places that I get inspiration from. So I have to like get back into it. Cause like you listen to music that you enjoy, and especially when you're a creative. Like, you are listening for ideas, and I really love her music, so I want to listen to it, but I don't want it to always sound like Billie Eilish.
Yeah.
And like I just said, like, I want to come up with my thing. I don't want to have a specific sound, and so far I don't, but we'll get there. I have a long road ahead of me.
Yeah, and that's something that you'll have to just kind of figure out by trial and just making music. Mm-hmm. It's something that you wish you could just like, all right, this is it. You know, I got my I make music package, mm-hmm. and this is what I'm supposed to do. But that's the beauty of seeing an artist become who they are, mm-hmm. is because they go through all these changes, they go through all these trials and errors of the music business, and then they just kind of figure out who they are. I think somebody who's done a great job is Taylor Swift. Like,
yeah.
How she has changed over time, and then now she literally has her Eras tour of taking people through the different eras.
Insane.
Is immaculate of a career that I think that's so smart of her marketing team and just her of being able to change over time. Like, yeah. Some people, they either don't change, and so they kind of like dwindle out over time. And then some people change too much, and then they do the same thing. They dwindle out because they're just trying to change with the times in the wrong way. Like, they're just trying to change too much, and then they lose who they are. But you kind of have to, like, change with the times, but still be true to who you actually are on the inside. So do you feel like that's starting to form for you, or are you just kind of like, I'm just making music, man?
I think it's still forming. Mm-hmm. I don't think I could pinpoint anything yet, but I don't know. I feel like a lot of pressure to go ahead and just get it figured out, because I don't know why.
Yeah.
I just feel that pressure.
And when we started working together, you wanted to like do song after song after song. I was like, that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, I love working, but I don't want you to lose the energy of the song you just finished and like lose interest in that song, because you still have to put that song out. You still got to market that one song. So don't try to jump too fast.
I just wanted to have options, especially if I was going to start performing. Like, I didn't want to not have songs to perform.
Yeah.
And I'm still kind of in that boat, but whatever. And then like watching, the people that are in DMG, it's like, y'all kind of have your thing. And granted, you've been recording longer than I have, and had more time to figure out your image. But like, I'm jealous. Like, I want to look cool, and I want to have an audience and for people to expect a certain thing from my music. And with the two songs that I have out right now, it's kind of like, it's like two different ends of the spectrum, it feels like.
Yeah. And when you have like stuff actually out, you feel different about it compared to stuff that's just like sitting on a hard drive or something. It's that music that's actually out. You're like, man, like, this is who I am. Cause nobody else knows the other music that I'm holding on to. They can't hear it. They can't play it all the time. So that it is your identity. The stuff that's out for people to actually listen to. And I tell people all the time, that's when it's time to market, when something's actually out. Cause what happens is people like to market their music before they release it. So like 2 weeks before, they're telling everybody, oh, I got this song coming out. Oh, I got this album coming out. And then it comes out and they're promoting it. And then the day after, they're promoting it. And everybody's like posting their music or whatever. And then like 2 weeks later, like nothing. They don't talk about it. And I was like, that's when you were supposed to be talking about it. Because people can actually listen to it. They can't listen to it before it comes out, but they can listen to it after it comes out. So you need to be promoting it for the mostly after it's already out, because people want to be able to actually go listen. And you can create, you know, a lot of, I probably haven't really talked about this with all of y'all, but like, you can create a lot of value for yourself with that pre-listening, because, or pre-release, because you could, you know, we talked about like creating your, like a newsletter. So like, if you got people on a newsletter and where they can email you, then you're like, hey, because you're on this newsletter and you're getting my emails, I just want to send you the song I'm working on. And I've been working on this, blah, 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 blah. like that creates value because people are like, yeah. Oh my God, like, dude, you got to get on this newsletter. Like Jupiter's been sending us music every week, blah, blah, blah. So like that right there creates excitement around who you are. And I think that if more artists kind of did that, which I think we're kind of getting in that realm, like somebody recently was talking, James Blake. Do you listen to his music?
That's a white guy, right?
Yeah. I never even heard of him before.
What does he say? He sings something that I listen to, but I can't remember what it is.
I think he recently just came out with an album that was different. It's got like some hip-hop music on it. Because I think like Lil Yachty is on there and people were talking about how it's different.
James Blake.
I saw a video of Lil Yachty talking about James.
Okay.
But I heard somebody talking about him and saying like his music, this last album or something he put out was different than what he usually does. And, but I had never heard of him ever. And then he's talking about how he's going to start releasing music on like his own, like, or like some new platform and how it's going to be like direct to consumer, all this stuff, and like bypassing the labels and everything. I'm just like, so Bandcamp, like that's what Bandcamp already is. And there's a bunch of other platforms that are just like that. And you can start your own website and do that. But I don't know. A lot of these big name artists are trying to do independent artist type things. And it's like, hey, this already exists. You're just now doing what we've already been doing.
Yeah. I wonder where they're getting those ideas from or why they're doing it.
I think they're just waking up. Like they're realizing like, oh, maybe this whole big name record label thing isn't as awesome as we thought it was. And the independent thing is actually better.
Yeah.
You just don't have the resources. That's it. That's the only difference. Like you're still the same. You're still got to go make music. It gets released. You market it. People buy it. People stream it. It's the same thing. But one of them, you just have a lot more resources than the other one. That's pretty much it. And I was talking to somebody about like the music industry is completely backwards. Like you fortunately were able to, now obviously like DMG is not some global monster as far as like a record label, but like you got the experience that I think everybody should get. So I was thinking about like the government, right? So like if you're poor and you need assistance, you can get welfare, you can get food stamps, like you get all this help. If you are rich, you get no help because you're rich. You don't need help.
Figure it out.
It's the opposite in the music business. Mm-hmm. When you are poor, which you're just starting out making music, you get no help. And then when you make it big, you get all the help from the record label. Why is that not the opposite? Like people who are just starting out should be able to apply to a record label, kind of like a job. Like, yeah. Hey, I want to make music. You know, I'm applying to be a musician for your label. And then when you make it big in the label, it's like they release you. Like, hey, you've made too much money. Now we have to release you so you can do your own thing. Mm-hmm. That's how the music industry should go. But it's the opposite right now.
Yeah. I've seen, especially on TikTok, a lot of industry plants, and it's always Nepo babies. And
what is that?
A nepotism baby. So, like, their parents are famous or rich or something. Yeah. And it tends to be that the music is not incredible. Mm-hmm. And that's my opinion. I'm not saying that's a fact, but it's frustrating because, for example, Diari, like if he had
industry plant,
if he had the funds or whatever else he needed, he would be famous right now, like without a doubt. I know it, but it's just frustrating because these labels are finding these people that are making shitty music and then boosting them and giving them all these resources and these cool videos, and the song sounds like shit, but the video looks cool. So people are like, oh, this person's cool. I'm going to listen to their music. And it's like, why are you not looking? Cause there's so many other people that could have used that resource that you just gave to this person that doesn't even have the talent. Just my opinion.
Yeah. I think there's too much of that in the music industry, and no offense to Ice Spice, but like everybody could tell when she first was coming out that like she didn't have any real skills, like as far as outside of the music, mm-hmm. like people were noticing her performances and they're like, her performances aren't that good. Like, why is she doing these big shows? Like, she can't perform well. And, you know, again, that's an opinion to say somebody is not good at performing. But if it's that obvious that the average fan can see and is talking about it, then obviously there's something wrong. Because that's who your target market is, the average fan. Mm-hmm. Your target market is not somebody who doesn't listen to music. And it's not somebody who is a record label executive. It's mm-hmm. the average person listening to music. So if they can recognize that Ice Spice didn't have all that talent, then why is the record label just letting her go out there and do that? Like, they should be like, hey, have you ever performed in front of this many people before? Like, what kind of performances are you willing to do? Which she's probably like, I'll do anything. Y'all going to pay me. I'm going to get my money. Throw me out there.
I would.
It's hard to get embarrassed when you're getting $100,000.
Yeah.
Real hard to embarrass me when I'm making that kind of money. So, yeah, I mean, she's probably going to do whatever they ask because it's money. Money's money. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, like, she should be concerned about her image because of longevity mm-hmm. in the industry. And that's something I think a lot of artists right now aren't thinking about, which if you're like 25 and younger, longevity is really hard to think about because you live like a quarter of your life at 25. You're not really thinking about 65 or something like that, which most people aren't even in music that long. But like, I mean, look at Nelly. Like, Nelly was one of the hottest people in the industry, like in the early 2000s. Nobody's listening to Nelly right now. And if you are, then you've been a faithful Nelly listener. Mm-hmm. But like, if, you know, even if like a big label came and scooped you up, like you haven't done that many performances. Like if tomorrow or next week or something, let me use the example of like South by Southwest. We just had that. Like, imagine if you had to go perform at South by Southwest now in front of like hundreds of thousands of people. Like, you would be shell shocked. But
my goodness. I don't even want to think about that. That freaks me out.
And thinking about like all the marketing stuff that led up to that, all the interviews you had to do and all that kind of stuff. Like, you were talking about being nervous before this. Like, imagine being in front of like so many people and everybody's like trying to get that like in your head and all this stuff and get you prepared. It's not great. So yeah, the industry has definitely got it backwards as far as like how we prepare artists and groom them for the real world, in my opinion.
I think it comes down to what can they do for the label. Like, I definitely think they just saw Ice Spice and they were like, she can give us money.
Yeah.
Because she's beautiful. Her music isn't bad. It's just when she's on stage, it's just lacking something. Like, she just kind of walks around.
Yeah.
And that, like, saying that makes me feel weird because I'm still figuring out like what to do on stage. Yeah. And if I'm not doing something, it's because I'm freaked out, not because I just don't want to do it.
Yeah.
But like, I know that I'm not just supposed to walk back and forth on stage. Like, I want people to have fun when I'm performing.
Yeah.
And like, want to move. And if I'm not moving, why would they want to move?
Yeah. And I tell people all the time, like, go to a Crisis J show. Mm-hmm. Like, Crisis is a great performer. And I tell people all the time, like, the one time he watched me perform, he was like, man, you did good, but you got to do this and you got to do that. Mm-hmm. I was like, what is he talking about? But like, now I'm like, I see what he was talking about. Yeah. Like, he's really good at rocking the crowd. Like, mm-hmm. he knows how to move the crowd and make the crowd, like, you know, do that kind of call and answer. And I'm just like, man, like, that's a performance.
Yeah.
And I know you haven't been listening to like a lot of rap music, but that's what people have been saying about rap music nowadays. It's dwindling because these artists aren't making music for performances. Mm-hmm. Like, trap music ain't a performance type music. Like, I'm not going to a concert to listen to somebody talk about like a bunch of trap type stuff. But like, back in the day, like, all the older rap music, it was like party music. It was like, you know, stuff that you want to rock to. So mm-hmm. like, that's a big difference. And I think a lot of artists need to think about that when they make their music, is how am I going to perform this? How can I turn this song into a performance song instead of just something that just goes on streaming sites and I'm telling people to, hey, buy this song. Like, they could have a better emotional attachment to it if they come to one of my performances and listen to me perform this song. Mm-hmm. So that's a big deal in my opinion.
Yeah, I definitely think about that when I'm recording stuff, especially with Chosen. Like I had like this idea in my mind of what it would look like to perform it, and it didn't actually happen until the Ink Therapy show that we did. I was mainly just trying to think about, like, are they going to want to sing along with this? Are they going to want to do, like, a little sidestep, you know, because it's not, like, a super heavy song. When I was on stage, I didn't plan to, and this isn't, like, a big deal, but it is for me. I told everybody to sing the chorus with me. It's just a la-da-da thing, and they did. And I was like, hello? Like, I'm in control right now? You're actually going to sing with me? And it felt so good. And, like, there's a video of it that I have, but, like, you can't tell just how excited I was because I was trying to play it cool.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you are supposed to sing along. I was expecting you to sing along when I asked you to. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But that was, like, a really big confidence booster as far as, like, performing and then, like, thinking about performing songs that I record in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a great thing to do. And like that Bethany chick I was telling you about earlier, we were talking about the whole pre-production thing. And pre-production is something I've like learned about a couple of years ago. But it's basically the concept of like me and, so usually you find a beat and you like come to me to work on the song. Mm-hmm. But like pre-production would be, hey Bree, let's hit the studio, you know, tomorrow night at 8. So we go to the studio and we're like, okay, what kind of song do we want to make? And then that's pre-production, mm-hmm. where you like have no idea what you want to do. And then you start just piecing together ideas. I'm like, okay, I use this example, like, let's make a song about a butterfly. Okay, so why are we making a song about a butterfly? Well, butterflies are really pretty. They come out at a certain time of year. They evolve. Oh, cool. All right. Well, let's make a song about evolving. Well, butterflies, they come from a caterpillar, they get in a cocoon, and then they become a butterfly. So let's make something about something that's really shy and small and insignificant, mm-hmm. and then it goes through a phase where it hides away, and then it becomes this beautiful butterfly and just like spreads its wings and does great things. Like that's pre-production, where you come up with this concept of from beginning to end of how you want the song to be. Like, oh, we could have the first verse like this, and then the chorus could like change over time. The chorus could evolve just like the butterfly. And so your words change in the chorus as well with the song. And at the end, like you have bigger vocals. Like mm-hmm. you might have small vocals at the beginning and like big vocals at the end. And then like your visuals, we could have a music video where like you change, like you, we could have a kid at the beginning, or you could just like be shy at the beginning. And then at the end, you'd like have like these wings or something like, mm-hmm. and then your performances could be all the same. That's all pre-production, where you have this idea that you kind of put together from beginning to end of the song. And then you're like, okay, now let's make a song. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, now we have to make a song. Like, we have to put words together instead of just like, all right, I like this beat. I'm going to write some words to it. You know, those are two completely different feels.
Yeah. That's usually what I do is I'll go beat searching. And then whenever I find one, it just kind of hits me. And majority of the time, I write that song as soon as I find the beat. It'll probably take me less than an hour. And, like, that feels good. But, like, I really want to keep writing with other people because it is such a struggle for me. Like, I think I worry about saying something weird or, like, not being on the same page or, like, what if it takes too long or what if we don't write anything at all? And the latter is what usually happens. And then that's even more frustrating because it's like, well, I should have just done this by myself. I've only really had two good writing experiences with other people.
So. I think you're at a disadvantage with pop music because most people aren't really listening to the lyrics in pop music. Like they are, they know the words, but like they aren't really paying attention. Like, dang, what was that song? Cisco's Thong Song. Like somebody recently just posted it And they were talking about, like, Thong Song was so good that people didn't realize that he literally just sang the same verse over and over again. And I was like, I did not know that. Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, I knew that as a kid, like, the words were similar, but I didn't realize it was literally the exact same verse. Yeah. So he literally had, like, a good chorus a couple times, two or three times, and, like, he literally sang the same verse over and over. That was the whole song. And I was like, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. But that was more like hip-hop or R&B or whatever. But even for pop, like, what's that song? Like, I'm blue, da-da-dee-da. But, like,
the Bebe Rexha version or the original? Oh,
the original version.
Okay.
Yeah. Rachel showed me the Bebe Rexha version. I was like, she literally is just doing this song.
It's so good.
But it does. It sounds amazing.
Yeah.
But even for her, like, imagine she found a song that sounded good, that was a hit, and decided to redo it. And the lyrics are, I'm blue, da ba dee da ba da. Like, there's no real words.
Yeah.
You're just making noises.
Yeah.
But it's a killer song.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the disadvantage of pop music and wanting to be a good lyric. Now, granted, great lyrics. Da ba dee da. Like, people are going to remember that. Mm-hmm. Very intelligent to think about that. But it's not really heartwarming and moving.
Yeah.
So that's pop music, though.
I think that was something that I noticed back to Billie Eilish, was her lyrics. While she did have this, like, extreme pop sound, it was like, you're talking about some real shit. Mm. Like, you're talking about stuff that I've related to or that I've gone through. And I know that other people are listening to these lyrics as well. But it's like, how can I have a pop sound and not be, like, super generic? 'Cause Chosen... gonna talk about it again. It's like, on the surface, it says something, and it's very easy to tell what it is. But for me, like, because I wrote it, it's like, I know you guys, like, I want you to understand the deeper meaning, and, like, my feelings were hurt, and I want you to know that. But I feel like that's just something that people have to pick up on if they want to.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating sometimes that, like, I can't just. I don't know. Because I didn't want to write it to be, like, a super intense song, because it's not an intense beat. I want to be in pop and still be able to get across a message that's not just, I'm single and heartbroken and sad.
Yeah.
So
I think a lot of pop lyrics are very elementary, and which is good. Because that means, like, anybody can listen to it, from, like, a kid all the way to an old person. Like, anybody can sing along, or, like, have ease of understanding the lyrics. But yeah, you do kind of run into that whole, people are just kind of bobbing their head and just kind of listening to it and not really, like, being like, oh man, that's deep. But I think Billie has mastered that. I think she's done a great job at captivating people with her mood. Like, she has a great way, and her brother definitely has been helping produce and making the music have a mood and a feeling to it. And when you have somebody on your team that is able to do that, which, you know, I would love to try and basically be your Phineas, of not just allowing you to put some lyrics on a beat, but to, like, maybe if we did this, maybe that would sound cool. Which we did that on, was it Chosen? Oh, like, yeah, the hums. Remember, you didn't have those hums in there.
Yeah.
And then we added that.
I could not get the sound right at first. I think about that every time I hear them.
And there was something else we added in there. Was it, dang, I don't even remember what it was. I think it was, like, more words or something like that. And I told you, I was like, don't worry about, like, making it sound great.
Oh, yeah. It was the la-da-da's, like, trailing off.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
you didn't want it to be, like, in time. You wanted it to be, like, I'm just kind of singing along while I'm driving or something.
Yeah, yeah. Because I thought that's what people would do. I'm like, people are going to listen to this and be like, la-da-da-da. And I was like, just throw that in there.
Yeah.
Because it's something for people to just listen to, and they're going to remember that. Like, they might not even remember any of the rest of your words, but I bet you they're going to remember that. La, da, da,
it's so easy.
It's easy.
Like, come on.
Yeah. So yeah, you can't overthink lyrics in pop music, but at the same time, if you're trying to hit people in the feels, you have to do it very strategically.
Mm-hmm. I just wrote a song recently. We still need to record it, by the way. But it sounds like what I want my music to sound like when I'm angry or like when I'm sad.
Mm.
And like I'm really excited about it, and that's why we need to record it, because I think I have a lot of ideas for it. I'm just worried that once we actually record it, all those ideas are not going to work.
I mean, that happens like when you have a feeling and you don't record the music at the time of that feeling. If you're angry or mm-hmm. if you're sad or something like that. I even talked to Sony about that. Like he was talking about, gosh, what was the name? So like Soul Circa. Mm-hmm. Like he's like Soul Circa. I was in a certain state of mind and I think he was trying to do like, it wasn't a sequel to Soul Circa, but or like a part two or anything, but it was going to be similar to it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, well, I don't feel like doing that right now. He's like, I need to wait. I got to put that off. And that's very smart of him to like realize the state he's in right now and that he didn't want to put that music out or even like record the music like in his current state.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens with, do you know Matt Lucas?
I know who he is.
Yeah, because yeah. of just the music or whatever. But yeah. We'll have to introduce you because I think I let him listen to your music and he really liked it.
Oh, great.
But Matt, like I had a song that I wanted him to get on. And he was like, nah, I can't do it because it was too happy. And he was like, I'm trying to put out like some dark stuff right now. It's mm-hmm. like stuff that I'm thinking about. And I was like, completely understandable.
Yeah.
Like, you're not in that place. Don't record that. And I completely support that.
Yeah. I think when I recorded Hot Blooded, that was like a few days after I had written it. And that was like a happier song, I guess you could say happy.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can really hear it. If you're listening to it, you can hear that I was actually feeling those things and thinking those things. But if I were to record that today, it would not translate. Mm. It would just not have the same energy. Yeah. That's where my brain decided to stop.
Yeah, I mean, is there anything that you, like you've tried to record where you just weren't in the right state? I know we did one time where you your voice wasn't right, but like mood wise, have you tried to record something and or even just try to like write something? That's it for me. Like recording wise, like I know when I feel like I should record or not, but like writing wise, that's big for me. I make sure I'm in the right state when I'm writing because I like a lot of most of my music is very either energetic or like emotional, like heartfelt.
Mm-hmm.
So like when I write it, I'm like, man, it's like 8 a.m. Like I don't need to be writing something. Mm-hmm. Or man, it's like midnight, 11 o'clock. I don't need to be writing something like this.
Yeah.
So I'll stop myself from even writing. I'm like, my mood and emotions is going to affect my lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, nope. I'll put this off till tomorrow. Like I'll finish writing this another day.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever like ran into that with recording or just writing?
Yes, with recording, but with writing, I don't really plan when I'm going to write something unless it's just been a while and I need to get something off my chest. But I usually I know what I'm going to write about when I start. And if it's 1 a.m, it's like I have to get it out now because it might not be here tomorrow, like when I wake up. So I just kind of I write when I'm feeling like really strong emotions and I need to put it in some form of a song. I have had instances where I've written lyrics to a certain beat when I was feeling upset about something or sad, and then I'll come back to it and I'll read those lyrics and it's like, I'm not a fan. I'm glad that I got it out, but it was more of like a diary entry than actually writing a song. And then I've rewritten that song and then it works out fine.
Do you write a lot?
Define a lot.
So I would say, okay, let's just say how often do you write?
At least a verse a week. Like it's I think I do a full song at least once a month, but it's I am an emotional person. So there's a lot of stuff that goes in my head, and I've kind of trained myself to think of it towards music. 'Cause it's like, I know that there are certain feelings that people haven't put into words, or there's somebody needs that to be put into words for them. So I just kind of put it in my own words and try and figure it out from there. I think I answered your question. I hope I did.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was just curious how often you write, because like, as what you said, being an emotional person, like sometimes you just need to get your thoughts out. Like you need an outlet to get out of your own head, because a lot of people, that's what they do struggle with. Like they struggle with being in their head too often. And if they don't write, like then they just kind of psych themselves out, or they'll lose that kind of energy. And like they'll lose that goodness that's going on in their head. You know, a lot of people might find emotions like a bad thing, especially for men. Like men are like, you know, be the strong masculine men or whatever. But it's like, if you can channel your soft side or your emotional, I'm not going to say soft, your emotional side and turn that into something good, then you have been able to channel like energy that could be used for something good. For instance, like if you are a very caring person and like you just like cry about everything, you can use that to help other people, especially as a man. Like if you're a man that's supposed to be like this masculine man or whatever, and you're just like, man, I don't want people to know that I'm like crying about this, like that might help somebody. Yeah. Like if people knew that like The Rock was like crying all the time watching My Dog Skip. I say that because that was the first movie I probably cried in, was My Dog Skip. But, you know, just somebody who is doing something different than what people think. Like a lot of people think, you know, certain people are like a certain way, like just having a persona about you. And then being able to change that persona by showing it, being like, oh, no, like, you know, I have a lot of issues, too. Like, I go through this. Me and my wife's marriage isn't that great. I've been going to therapy every day. I've been drunk every single night. I got to do this, got to do that. Like, people be like, oh, my God, I had no idea. But if you're able to, one, admit those things, and then, two, tell people like, hey, you know, I'm going through this. Like, you can hear it in my music. You know, that's what this song was about. Like, y'all thought I was just making it. Like, no, I was actually going through that.
Yeah.
You can have those words, and people are like, man, you know, that's deep. And it hits home to people, and it hits differently to people. So I think that's great that if you have that ability to just write out when you get emotional, instead of being like, no, I need to tame my thoughts. Like, no, just get that stuff out.
Yeah. That was what happened with Threat when I wrote that. I was so angry, and I was at work, and I was like, you know what? The only thing that will help is if I write a song about it. Mm-hmm. So I found a beat that I had saved from whenever and wrote the song in like 15 minutes, and I had completely processed my emotions. I was like, I'm not even angry anymore. It is in song form. It will either go out into the world or it won't, and that'll be that. But that's like another thing that writing helps me with, is like processing my emotions. 'Cause like I don't, it's like I get to focus on something else, and I'm forced to confront my feelings at the same time. And so that's really important. And then getting to listen to songs back from whenever I record, if I recorded them, or like read the lyrics back, it's nice to know that that helped me get through whatever it was I was going through. There was something else I was going to say, and it's out of my brain now, so you won't be getting it. Sorry.
It's all good. Yeah, I'm definitely seeing your growth as far as like, not saying like your writing is getting better as far as like, oh man, your lyrics were horrible now, that was better. But like your process of thinking, like how you end up writing, like the words that you end up coming up with. That's cool, watching you evolve and do that. But also, you know, kind of like that pre-production stuff that I was talking about earlier, mm-hmm. like you're starting to think about the end goal in mind, which is like invaluable to who you become as an artist. Because if you know the type of stuff that you're going to end up doing and performing, like, you know, you were talking about how happy you were when you told everybody to sing along in the chorus and they did. Mm-hmm. Like, since that was so special to you, now you know what it's like to write something like that in your music. So mm-hmm. you're like, ooh, I could do this right here.
Yeah.
And so that's just going to spark your brain in the future.
Yeah. I think I definitely want to start performing more songs of mine live instead of doing covers. I just, the ones that I have recorded now, I'm not, they don't have that like crowd interaction thing going on. Mm. So it, like the first time I did Threat, it was like the room was dead. And I was like, so I'm not doing that again. it didn't hit, and that's okay. I learned, and I'll just leave it at that. Yeah, I think I know that a lot of artists write their music for concerts or like for performances, and I don't want to just do that, but I'm definitely like weaving it in to songs when I'm writing them.
What some other things that you are looking forward to, like in your music career, like things that you want to accomplish, or maybe some venues around here you love to perform at, mm-hmm. people you'd like to work with, or some different things you look forward to?
Oh goodness, there's a lot. I want to travel for music. I would love to go to California. I'd love to do something in Nashville.
Have you ever been to California?
I haven't.
It's great.
I want to go so bad.
Yeah, we should go sometime so for poor. Sure.
One day.
Yeah, we'll go.
There's people that I want to work with, but they don't want to work with me. I don't reckon. They don't even know who I am. And then I guess like performing, I want to perform at High Tone again, but in the big room upstairs. Okay. I want to do Growlers. I want to do, there's, I don't remember what it's called, but there's like a stage section at the Pyramid, and it like looks over the river, and it's outside and it's really pretty. I would love to perform there. That would be so cool. I'm really excited to like gain a fan base, because getting to watch people interact with their fans, it seems like such a special bond.
Yeah.
And like knowing that someone showed up to a show for you and are they're screaming your lyrics back at you, that has to be so special.
Yeah.
I think that's like the number one thing that I want, is to just have a fan base that like gives a shit about my music and like understands. But yeah, that's pretty much everything, I think.
Yeah. Is there local people that you've always wanted to work with, or you ever thought about anybody specifically that you're like, man, like people that you like don't know?
Locally?
I mean, not don't know, like don't know them personally, but you've like heard of them, like, man, they would be cool to work with.
I've always thought about reaching out to Raneem. I follow her on Instagram.
Yeah,
Raneem.
Yeah.
I don't think she follows me back. That's okay.
I can reach out to her. I've had her in the studio before.
Okay.
Yeah.
I saw her perform at the Cooper Young Fest. I think it was either last year. It was last year.
So what would you want to do with her?
Like a duet of sorts.
Okay.
Write a song. Record it. I love her voice. And she seems... I like the way she dresses. That tells me a lot about you as a person, the way that you dress. I like the way she dresses.
True.
And I've met Louise Page, but we like haven't had a conversation. Mm-hmm. She seems very cool as well. I don't think there's anyone else. Yeah, I don't think there's anyone else that I'm not already working with.
Well, now I got it recorded, so now I got to go make it happen.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Anything else? We can go ahead and wrap this up.
No.
All right. Well, what do you have? Let's see. You've got, what was it, like three songs that we have like technically done, mm-hmm. but we're ready to, you know, figure out what we want to do with them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we got to do that. And we haven't done a music video. We got to do a music video.
Yeah. I hate music videos. I hate them. I hate
Well, technically we have done one, but you and DR got to decide to release it.
Well, he wanted to. I didn't.
That's right.
Still kind of don't. If I watch it again, I'll probably start crying.
Oh, so. My God. It's not that bad.
You're not me, so you don't get to say that.
Okay. Well, tell everybody how they can find you, social media, email, whatever you got.
Jupiter Jones Music on Instagram, TikTok, Jupiter Jones. That's J-U-P-I-T-O-R, not E-R. What else do I have? Jupiter Jones on Spotify. That's everything.
Cool. Yeah. Well, it's great having you on. It's great having this talk. Definitely, like, every time I have people on that already know, I end up learning something new, or a lot of stuff new about mm-hmm. them. And but, yeah, long overdue. But thank you. Thank you for doing
this. Thank you.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you for everybody for tuning in. See you next time.